Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
And welcome back, Afternoon Drive. Goodman Mason, watch us, MileHighSports.com. You can reach us, Rocky Mountain Forest Products Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. If you're looking for wholesale lumber to the public, go to RMFP.com. In the meantime, I want to tell you about Rocky Mountain Eurosport in Denver and in Parker. And if you go there, you can drive your dream car today. You're not working with some big dealership that's going to be selling volume and just treats you like a number. At Rocky Mountain Eurosport, it is an intimate buying experience because you know what? If you want a luxury car, everyone deserves a luxury car buying experience, don't you think? So whether it's a luxury car or you want a foreign car, domestic car, no problem. They got the inventory, and they're going to get you the car you want at the price that you want. They also service all makes and models. They have fantastic finance options. The owner, Josh, runs a great shop there. Go in and tell him I say hello and say hello to him because he is going to be just – you're just going to love working with him and his team. Get on over to Rocky Mountain Eurosport in Denver and in Parker. Go for a test drive today or find them at rmeurosport.com. Time now for the lead.
The lead, presented by Sasquatch Casino in Blackhawk.
Okay, Mesa, we talked about at the top of the show, now they're with the bye week. We talked about the MVP. We both agreed it's Bridgewater, although I think a lot of people probably just drove off the road when I said that after what happened in the last game. But
I can't wait to put that clip on social media.
We're looking at the body the entire season. At the end of the day, he's been the best quarterback since Manning. You want to argue with me? Give us a call. 303-831-1340. Bring it and bring it as much as you want to.
He may be average, but average is an upgrade.
That's right. The bar hasn't been set very high.
Right.
With that, offensive MVP, we decided to not talk about the quarterback. We went with other positions on the team. You went with Melvin Gordon. I went with Tim Patrick. Defensive MVP, you went with Justin Simmons. I went with Pat Surtain. With that, who's been the biggest surprise?
And surprise is kind of a positive thing.
Yes.
Because we'll get to the other side.
Well, biggest disappointment is kind of self-explanatory.
Yes, it is. But the biggest surprise on this team for me, it's Caden Stearns. Even though he hasn't had many reps, he has been arguably the most efficient player on this team in terms of maximizing his reps. And it looks like now they'll be more than willing to let Kareem Jackson leave in free agency after the season and hand the baton at safety next to Justin Simmons to Caden Stearns.
Yeah.
They may have found a starter in the fifth round.
I was going to go with him. I was actually considering him for best rookie, not because he has played a lot and he's been great throughout, but when he's been on the field, he has been impactful. He has made plays. But I will go with that guy, Caden Stearns, as the biggest surprise. Biggest disappointment, I think this is a no-brainer.
Yeah, it's Garrett Bowles has got to be an all-pro.
No, he's not my biggest disappointment. Apparently, it wasn't that obvious.
Yeah, okay. There are other guys you could argue for, but
no, there's only one. There's only one.
Who?
Kyle Fuller. Don't tell me what he's done in his last two games. He got benched.
Yeah.
He got benched with that contract. He has been an enormous disappointment.
A contract that is double what Garrett Bowles was making, or half what Garrett Bowles was making. Bowles making double. I think in both cases, what we are the reason why you can argue for them as disappointments is that they're not coming close to living up to the value they're being paid at.
Fair.
Now, Bowles has played a bit better in recent weeks, but when you're talking about a $17 million a year tackle, that guy needs to be at a Pro Bowl level. And for too long this season, he wasn't close to that.
Okay. I'm going to go with Kyle Fuller. And what's funny is I certainly don't need the national media to tell me how to think, but this just goes to my point of picking Kyle Fuller, which I would have picked him anyway. I think I saw on one website, I can't remember who it was, they picked the 8 biggest disappointments in the NFL, and Kyle Fuller was actually on that list. along with Sam Darnold and yada, yada, yada. Best rookie?
Surtain.
Yeah. I know everybody wants to say Javonte Williams.
It's Surtain by a nose. Look, if Javonte Williams, we talked about how it could flip the ratio of work between Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams, the touches they have.
Yeah.
If that flips, and it flips, let's say it flips to the point where Javonte is getting 75% of the snaps and the carries at running back, and he's effective, and we could be talking about Javonte Williams being the best rookie by the end of the season, especially if Javonte, let's say Williams gets more of the lion's share of the work, and the Broncos go 5-2 the rest of the way. If that happens, I think we can argue for Javonte Williams, but based on what we have today, Pat Surtain is a top 10 rookie who is already your number one cornerback.
Right.
And how many rookies are legit CB1s? How many rookies are legitimately in the Pro Bowl discussion in their first year? Right. He is. Right. Wouldn't surprise because of the fact that he's a first rounder. He does have that recognition. Would not surprise me if Surtain sneaks his way into the Pro Bowl.
We might agree on the next one. I'm not sure because I think it's one of two guys.
Yeah.
But we'll see if we agree. What injury has affected the Broncos the most this season?
Wow. I mean, this is kind of a coin flip.
That's what I mean. I think it comes down to two guys. Let's see if we're on the same page. In 3, 2, 1, go.
Jerry Jeudy.
That's where I was going.
Yeah, not Bradley Chubb.
Right.
They effectively replaced Bradley Chubb for most of the year. Now, yeah. It's without Von Miller, you're seeing the strains of it now. You're without Miller and without Chubb for multiple games here. And so we could see, for example, last Sunday, Philadelphia, and they, I thought, exposed Malik Reed in particular against the run. And that's where this is kind of broken down. Malik Reed is a pass rusher. He's on pace to have another 8 sacks, another 7 or 8 sack season, kind of like he had last year. But he's not been really strong at the point of attack. That, along with the injuries and inside linebackers, is a reason why you've seen the Broncos exposed against the run more often than not in recent weeks. So there's an argument for Chubb, but without Jeudy, the offense simply wasn't as dynamic. And fair or not, Jerry Jeudy is the wide receiver one when he's out there.
Right. Okay. At the beginning of the season, when we were in training camp, if somebody would have told you the Broncos would be 5-5 at the bye week, I'm not saying it feels like 2-8, which it does. But if I told you they'd be 5-5, no matter how they got there, but they'd be 5-5 at the bye week, would you have been happy, disappointed, or said, that's just right?
I had them 6-4 at the bye. I would have been slightly disappointed. And the other thing I would have said was they've used up their margin for error already.
No question.
So I looked at their schedule, looked at those opening three games, and then I expected that they would start 3-0, but then I thought they would get 3 of the next 7. And they got 2. They did not get it in the way that I thought they would. I thought the Broncos would get the Raiders at home, beat the Raiders at home, beat Washington, beat Philadelphia.
Right.
Losing to the Raiders at home, especially since the Raiders have declined since then, that's looking worse and worse. Losing to Philadelphia at home, that's just, you can't do that.
Right. I would say it was just about right for me. Again, I'm basing it on a 5-win team last year. But I did think this team would be better than they are. I thought the defense would be better than it has been. It has been horribly inconsistent. And please don't throw stats at me what they are in the red zone. At the end of the day, it's situational football, and you may have the best red zone defense in football, but maybe that's because you're giving up, 65-yard touchdown plays.
Well, the other thing is they're giving up more yards per drive than they were last year. And they're also giving up more points per possession than they were last year. Now you look at their scoring defense, and there they are. They're top three in the league in scoring defense on a per game basis. But they're allowing those points on fewer possessions because the offense, as we discussed earlier, it's controlling the ball more, and thus the defense is seeing fewer opportunities. So points per game are down, but points per possession, which basically adjusts for pace, that is up, unfortunately, for the Broncos. This defense, it's the highest paid D in football, and for too long, it had too many stretches. It hasn't looked like it. You know what? When we had these topics on there, and I was thinking about them, I nearly decided to say the biggest disappointment was the Denver defense as a whole.
Yeah, no question. All right, coming up after the break, ESPN had an article today on citing the toughest losses for each team in NFL history. ESPN picked the Broncos' divisional round playoff loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Do you agree? Well, I had a nice conversation with Rod Smith on the phone today, and I'll share some of his thoughts with you if he believes that is the biggest loss in Broncos history. That's next.
Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back. Afternoon Drive, Goodman, Mason. Watch us, MileHighSports.com. You can reach us, Rocky Mountain Forest Products Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman, if you're looking for wholesale lumber to the public. Go to rmfp.com. In the meantime, I want to tell you about Greenfield's Pool and Sports Bar. They are in Lakewood, and man, they have it all. Every sports package you can imagine. You can watch your favorite team, and you're going to have a great seat in the house. They also have a pool hall. Now, a lot of places have like 2-3 pool tables, if that. They have a pool hall, literally 15 tables and live music, no cover. Best happy hour in Lakewood, 2-for-1 wine, well, and drafts from 3 until 7 every day. And also, want to let you know, on February 25th, Mace, you and I are going to be guest bartenders at Greenfields. It's going to be on a Friday. We'll probably do that for a couple of hours. And our friend Chad at Greenfields Pool and Sports Bar is going to donate some of the proceeds from his sales to charity for us going out there. So please join us on Friday, February 25th. Again, Greenfields Pool and Sports Bar in Lakewood. It's got something for everyone. Time now for The Buzz.
The Buzz is presented by Rocky Mountain Eurosport. Go for a test drive today in Denver or Parker, because everyone deserves a luxury car buying experience. Or find them online at rmeurosport.com.
Okay, there was an article in ESPN today citing the toughest loss for each team in NFL history. ESPN picked the Broncos' 97 divisional round playoff loss to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, that's right up there, if not at the top of the list. Maybe the only other game I might be able to think of is what happened in 2012, in which the 2012 season, I should say, in which the Broncos lost to the Ravens and, you know, Raheem Moore miscalculated jumping, went for the interception, and we know that the Baltimore Ravens went on to win the Super Bowl. With that, is the Jaguars' loss the most heartbreaking? The Ravens' loss, in which Peyton Manning and many players on that team at that time would say it was their best team during the Manning era, or was it another game?
You know what? I mean, because heartbreaking usually implies like it's a close loss, right? They're like going through this list the ESPN compiled, there are not a lot of blowouts.
Right.
It's always like at the end, or you know, you had a lead, or like in the case of Houston against Kansas City a couple of years back, they had a 24-0 lead early and completely gagged on it. One thing that jumps out to me, even though it wasn't close but heartbreaking and incredibly consequential, was when the Broncos lost the 2005 AFC Championship game at home to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that game wasn't even close.
It wasn't close.
And you know why it wasn't close? There's a reason why.
The Broncos assumed once the Colts were out of the way, they felt like they had it easy, not looking at the fact that Pittsburgh hadn't lost in 3 months.
I was told by guys on that team that they overlooked Pittsburgh. The guys were in the locker room confident, overconfident, I should say, going out there thinking, we're just going to roll Pittsburgh. They're a sixth seed. We're a better team. We're at home. And boy, did they get smacked in the face.
That was an incredible missed opportunity, and it was a missed opportunity because, like you said, they took Pittsburgh lightly because that Bronco team, on balance, was better than that Steeler team that year, but they didn't come ready to play the way the Steelers did. That was a missed opportunity of the highest order, and if they had come on point emotionally that day. That changes so much about Bronco history and
maybe.
And
the, like, well, they have to win the Super Bowl,
right?
They would have been favored
to win that Super Bowl. And Seattle, as we know, played a really bad game that day.
With that, well, it doesn't mean they'd play a bad game against the Broncos. They played a bad game against the Steelers. But I digress. With that, what's the toughest loss?
I would say, personally, I give a slight edge to 2012 over 1996 is the toughest loss.
I'm going to go with the Jacksonville game for a lot of reasons, and I'm going to put this game in a few categories. It was not only the toughest, for lack of a better phrase, most devastating, but the most important loss in Broncos history. If there was ever a loss that was important, it was this one. Just to take you back, it's a game they should have won. They were the better team. They were the best team in the AFC that year. Jacksonville was a relatively new franchise. Had a really nice conversation with Rod Smith today, who was on that team. And he was actually on the field for arguably one of the most pivotal plays in Broncos history. And for those that don't remember, Rod Smith was standing back waiting for a punt. He was a punt returner back then. And Michael Dean Perry walked off the field. Not jogged, not moseyed, not chasséed, not skipped. He walked off the field. The Broncos were called for 12 men on the field. The Jaguars got a first down. The Jaguars score a touchdown. And that was the clincher. After that game, there were a lot of guys who were so banged up, facing surgeries. Terrell Davis was all banged up. He didn't face surgery. I think our friend Mark Schlereth, he did have surgery. Guys were all banged up, but they were so upset about that loss. The next day, they started focusing on the next season. Now, hold on. Let me finish this thought, though. But think about this for a second. This happened, and the Broncos, as a franchise, still had never won a Super Bowl. With that, there's no guarantee the Broncos would have won a Super Bowl that year, but they were so focused and so determined the day after, there was nothing stopping them despite being a huge underdog against the Packers. Nothing was going to stop them.
Yeah, it's funny because I think the back-to-back titles in 97 and 98 happened because they lost that game.
And I will tell you, it did.
And players have said that.
Yes.
And the thing is, let's say they beat the Jaguars and then the next week they would have played the Patriots at home and they beat the Patriots and go to the Super Bowl. But that Packer team, that was the best Packer team of that run was the 96 team.
Right.
It's entirely possible the Broncos could have gotten to the Super Bowl and lost. And what would that have done to the team, to the fan base?
You want me to tell you? Because I can tell you.
Go ahead.
I'll tell you what Rod told me.
Yeah.
He said this is why it was such an important loss. Because after watching Michael Dean Perry walk off the field, they decided as a team, no shortcuts, no death by inches. He told me everything got buttoned up.
Yeah.
There were going to be no little errors anymore. We are not going to let a guy walk off the field and cost us a game. They bring in Keith Traylor. They bring in Neil Smith. Michael Dean Perry, who was considering retirement after that season anyway, played one game for Kansas City, and he was done. Sadly for Michael Dean Perry, his moment was a similar to a Bill Buckner moment. Michael Dean Perry was a very good defensive lineman when he played. Not good. Very, very good. Pro bowler, all pro. He just had a bad moment, kind of like Teddy Bridgewater had a bad moment. But as Rod said to me, if we win that game, maybe we aren't buttoning everything up the following season as tightly as we did because we learned our lesson. And I said to him, do you think you would have won? Let's say you would have gotten to the Super Bowl and let's say lost to the Packers. Do you think you would have won back-to-back Super Bowls after that? And he said, I'm not so sure. Because that loss resonated with us and hurt so deep, we as a team decided we were not going to die by inches. And he said to me, when Neil Smith came in, he bought into that. He said, when Traylor came in, he said that guy bought into what we were going to accomplish with no dumb mistakes.
And you know what? It wasn't just those guys as well, because Howard Griffin at fullback was very important. And actually, I know that when the Broncos signed Griffith, he played for the Panthers when they went 12-4 and came within one game of the Super Bowl that in the 96 season. And when the Broncos signed Howard Griffith, a Panthers executive called a Broncos executive and said, you just took the heart out of our team.
Yeah.
And think about it. They said, you mentioned Neil Smith, Keith Traylor, Howard Griffith, Willie Green was another guy that came in from Carolina, same kind of like guys who were glue guys and leaders all came in. Would the Broncos have done that if they had gotten to the Super Bowl and lost? The dynamic wouldn't have changed. I mean, really, it took that defeat to make what followed possible. I mean, and that's one reason why, as heartbreaking as that game was in a vacuum, something so amazing came out of it that it ended up being a positive result in the arc of Bronco history.
And that's why I said, Mace, it was not only the biggest loss in Broncos history because they were so heavily favored, really against a new franchise, but it was also the most important game in franchise history. Because had they won a Super Bowl before that, okay, at least they're a Super Bowl champion as a franchise. To that point, they still hadn't won a championship, but like a rocket, they just launched straight up into the air for two straight seasons.
But I wonder what the emotional devastation would have been if they'd gotten to the Super Bowl and lost that year. And that's a tough thing. Because, I mean, when they lost Super Bowl 24, it was the third Super Bowl loss in four seasons. I wouldn't say there was a sense of relief the following year when they didn't make the playoffs, but it seemed like a very tired team that just kind of hit the reset button. And it turned out the year after they went 5-11 following those Super Bowl losses, they went 12-4 the next year. So it kind of worked out. What would have happened? What would have been the air around the team, the confidence of the team, if they'd gotten to the Super Bowl and lost? It might have been just absolutely devastating.
Well, I don't think it would have been. I don't think it would have been. I'll tell you why. Because when I was talking to Rod on the phone, he said all we kept hearing was how many times the Broncos had lost Super Bowls. You know what he said to me? None of us were on any of those teams. It didn't matter to any of us. That's what he said to me. That's his quote. Didn't matter to us. The only guy that was on that team was Elway. He said Terrell wasn't. I wasn't. I was a young player. Sharp was in the league for a little while. He said none of us felt that. None of us felt the weight of the world on our shoulders as Broncos players, knowing the history. He said that history was irrelevant. And then you know what I said to him to follow up? I said, you know what? We had a conversation on the show yesterday about the Avalanche playing the Vancouver Canucks. I said, Danny brought up in a segment called Just In Case You Missed It about what the Avalanche record was against Vancouver the previous like 5 years and how well they played or how poorly they played in Vancouver. And what did I say? talk about wasted space. What does it matter what the Avalanche did 4 or 5 years ago in Vancouver? Well, over half the guys weren't even on that team. By the way, what did the Avs do last night?
They beat Vancouver.
Did they win handily?
Yes.
I guess the guy who wrote up that game story and threw that in there, which I said yesterday and I'll repeat it again, wasted valuable copy space.
I just saw it as a tweet.
Did you?
Yep.
Oh, it's not your fault, but
I just wanted to let you know.
I find it
wasn't taking up that much copy space, but...
Well, you only get so many characters. If anything, in copy space, as you know as a writer, Mace, you could have 1,000 words. Just putting that in there, that's nothing. When you have 240 characters or whatever it is, that's valuable real estate. Still there?
I'm here, yes.
Okay,
I'm
just checking.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm just listening to you.
Okay. Well, that's nice. Well, you know, in the next segment, I want to listen to you. But I also want you to listen to a guy named John Hollinger, who is the president of the Nikola Jokic fan club. Wait till you hear what he wrote about Jokic. Finally, a national guy gets it. That's next.
Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back, Afternoon Drive. Goodman, Mason, watch us at MileHighSports.com. You can reach us, Rocky Mountain Forest Products Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. If you are looking for wholesale lumber to the public, go to rmfp.com. Time now for What's Trending.
What's Trending is presented by Impact Real Estate. Impact Real Estate is creative real estate and solutions with the greatest impact. Go to impactcommercial.co.
Well, we just found the president of the Nikola Jokic fan club outside of Denver, and his name is John Hollinger. He writes for The Athletic. And the title of his article, Nikola Jokic is that dude. This is what he wrote. Jokic is still the most effective regular season player in basketball. Voters seemingly reluctantly gave him the MVP last year and again appear to be scanning the universe for alternatives. And it may be harder to convince them after seeing Curry go amazeballs on Tuesday in the league's most prominent TV game of the season. I get the Steph mania. And all because the Warriors have been unbelievable. But for the love of all that is holy, would you please stop dismissing Jokic? He's basically a 7-foot point guard at this point, dragging an injury-riddled Denver team to competence. Yet we've heard comparatively little Jokic banter thus far, despite the fact that through 13 games, his PER of 35.5 ranks first all time in NBA history by a wide margin, actually. The best all-time best heading into this year was Giannis Antetokounmpo at 31.86. Now, granted, I don't know if Jokic is going to keep his PR at 35.4. With that, Mace, what is Jokic going to have to do to finally earn the respect of the national media?
It's a good question because, you know, you put this on there on the email that you sent about the show a few hours ago. And I've been thinking like, okay, is it market? Well, no, because
Giannis.
Giannis. And then back in the 1990s, Karl Malone got plenty of national love in Utah. It's not market. It's
style of play.
It's style of play, and I hate to say it, the way he looks.
No question.
Especially as he looked before he kind of remade his body, and it's that visual is not out of people's
minds. You know what? Instead of giving a visual, I'm going to give you a sound effect that go through people's heads when they watch Jokic. You dump the dump the dump the dump the dump the dump the dump. That's what it feels like people are thinking. He's just plotting down. 3-pointer. Crazy pass. Another rebound.
Yeah, I thought you were going to do like a tuba, like that they did on Family Guy once. Stewie following people around with a tuba.
Right.
Yeah.
Add your favorite musical interlude if you want.
Yes. Is it unfair? It's completely unfair.
Well, I'll tell you what I think will do it. And what will do it is what did it for Dirk Nowitzki. Dirk Nowitzki was always considered a very, very, very good player. Until he won a title, then he became considered one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, and that's what it's going to take here. I mean, because Giannis got that without the title. But Giannis looks... He looks the part, as in like he's you know his build, it's live, okay? The way he runs the floor in a way that Jokic doesn't. Jokic's talents don't show up as visually and as viscerally, but and also let's face it, the fact that he is not from the United States plays in, because who is the guy he's compared to skill set wise? Larry Bird, right?
Well, I'll tell you something.
Larry Bird's from French Lick, Indiana, and he played in the national championship game before he ever set foot in the NBA. So he had a credibility in people's minds that Nikola Jokic didn't, being a kid from Serbia who was kind of doughy for the first 4 years of his career.
Right. In some ways, and I want to make sure that I get this quote correctly. Okay, I want to make sure we get this quote correctly. Isaiah Thomas famously said about Larry Bird, if he was black, he would just be considered another player, right? That's how Larry Bird is viewed by Isaiah Thomas. Larry Bird did nothing overly flashy, but he was just great. But he is considered one of the all-time greats. And maybe Jokic needs to do it longer. Maybe that's what people are waiting for. But he has some things that are against him. Number one, you pointed out, he's a foreign-born player. Now, Giannis is a foreign-born player. And Doncic is a foreign-born player. Nowitzki was a foreign-born player. But Giannis, well, how should I say this? Giannis isn't white. So being white, that's kind of held against you too, a little bit. Because if you're white, you're considered completely non-athletic. Which... is an unfortunate stereotype, just like it's an unfortunate stereotype that when someone who is black, you don't use the word crafty when you talk about a black player, right? When a guy speaks well, like a Justin Simmons, well, he speaks well. That's such an insult. We have too many stereotypes that are out there, right? With that, Jokic is a foreign-born player. He is white. There's nothing flashy about his game. Nowitzki, nothing flashy about his game. Doncic, something flashy about his game. So if you're white, foreign born, and there's nothing flashy about your game, you're not hitting Sports Center.
Yep, you're not getting on the highlights every night.
Nope.
Because if you're going to get on Sports Center for a pass, it's got to be like one of those, like a no look pass, right? You don't get on Sports Center for the perfect anticipation of a player cutting outside and setting him up for a three. That doesn't make it on SportsCenter.
Right.
And it should.
One more thing.
That's what he does so well.
And I was really racking my brain on this. I have a couple guys. There are a lot of underappreciated stars, Hall of Famers in sports history. You can make the case easily. Jokic is the most underappreciated star possibly playing in sports today. He's the MVP, and people are still looking to hand out the MVP award to anybody who can score 30 points in a game and hit a three-quarter court shot or a half-court shot. Can you compare him to anybody who is so greatly underappreciated in his era? I can think of two guys.
Go ahead. I want to hear your comps.
Frank Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Robinson was an unbelievable baseball player, but in his era... he unfortunately played in the same era as Willie Mays. And
Henry Aaron.
Yep. So he got completely overshadowed by them. But the guy who's probably at the top of the list, He had to play in the same era as Joe DiMaggio. Stan Musial, and I know our friend Nolan here loves me hearing saying that. Stan Musial was a 20-time All-Star, 3-time MVP, 4th on the all-time hits list. Tremendously underappreciated because he was great, but not considered as great as some of his contemporaries. And that's where I think Jokic sits.
It's funny because, like, I've spent a fair amount of time in St. Louis over the years. And as you know, as Andrew would know, Stan Musial is
the man.
Is royalty.
Stan the man.
There's a statue of him outside of Busch Stadium, and it's popular for people to say, "I'll meet you at the Musial statue."
Right.
That it's a landmark.
Right.
He was and is a landmark. But you're right, outside of St. Louis and Cardinal Nation, doesn't get that same level of appreciation.
Think about this for a second. And he played for a long time, but think about the era that he played in, which was essentially two. He played from 41 to 63. That's 20 years. And he was a 20-time All-Star, or 23 years, whatever it is. He played in the same era as Ted Williams, who played in Boston, and played in the same era as Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays. How do you compete with that when you play in St. Louis?
Even though the Cardinals were a more accomplished franchise, than the Boston Red Sox.
It's still St. Louis. And you know what? For Frank Robinson, played in Baltimore. It's not Boston. It's not New York. Right?
Yeah.
Same thing. All right, what do we have coming up on, just in case you missed it?
Well, speaking of St. Louis, a development in the St. Louis versus the NFL lawsuit. Stan Kroenke might be going rogue on the other NFL owners.
No.
And also, AL and NL MVPs have been named in the MLB, and the sportsbooks took a big hit on that one.
And there's a guy at this station who crushed the sportsbook, and we're going to interview him after the break.
Afternoon Drive with Goodman and Mason, presented by Silter Har Mazda, a no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Andrew.
Welcome back. Afternoon Drive, Goodman Mason. Watch us, MileHighSports.com. You can reach us, Rocky Mountain Forest Products Twitter feed, at Mace Denver, at Eric Goodman. If you are looking for wholesale lumber to the public, go to rmfp.com. Time now for the final word.
The final word. Are you ready? Presented by Sasquatch Casino in Blackhawk. Just in case you missed it, is presented by Masterpiece Roofing. Find out how Masterpiece can get your insurance company to pay for your roof. Call 720-242-6404 or go to masterpieceroofing.com today.
Just in case you missed it, according to Ben Fisher of the Sports Business Journal, Stan Kroenke has threatened to cut his own deal with the St. Louis plaintiffs, who are suing the NFL, arising from the relocation of the Rams. It's expected to go to trial. Per the report, Kroenke will do this unless the league promises to spread around the final settlement and the financial burden of the judgment. Kroenke is saying essentially that he reserves the right to cut his own deal with the St. Louis plaintiffs and then force the rest of the league to stand trial without him. Do you think the owners will try to force Kroenke out of the league if he does cut his own deal with the city of St. Louis and leave the rest of the NFL holding the bag for the other suit?
You know what? If the NFL owners can't get Daniel Snyder out of the NFL can't get Daniel Snyder out of the league for all he's done, they're not going to be able to get Stan Kroenke out of the league. And the other thing is, I think it's the level of check that Stan Kroenke would have to write for St. Louis to say yes to a deal from at least just him is so absurdly high that I think it's a threat that is probably just hollow.
You know who's laughing uncontrollably right now? Al Davis. Somewhere out there, Al Davis is saying, good. Good for you, Stan. You got the NFL. But here's the thing, and you and I have talked about it before. All these owners are sharks in their own way, but they invited the big shark into the pool, and now the big shark is
Daddy Shark.
He is their daddy. Make no mistake about it. Jerry Jones has a lot of money, but Stan Kroenke's the daddy shark.
Yeah, he is. He's the bull shark. The bull shark is the most dangerous shark.
Yeah.
That's what he is. Stan Kroenke's the bull shark.
Just in case you missed it, announced this afternoon, the MLB MVP awards went to, in the AL, Shohei Ohtani, in the NL, Bryce Harper. Sportsbooks, one in particular, stands to lose over $1 million for Shohei Ohtani winning that award.
And you know what? There's a guy in studio here who helped some of those sports books take a bath. Nolan, who runs the controls for MileHighSports.com. You bet on Bryce Harper. You bet on Shohei Ohtani. Before the season started, tell us what you bet and what you won.
I put a $10 bet on Shohei Ohtani with plus 2,000 odds back in March before he even started. Great value there to win 210.
And Bryce Harper.
Placed this one back on August 5th at plus 3,000 odds on a $35 bet, won me $1,085.
Woo!
Drinks are on you tonight, Mace. I'll have a Moscow Mule in your honor. We have a show coming up, so we got to get to it, but final thoughts, Mace.
Yeah, you know what? First of all, we talked about the MVPs. I know you're not on board with Bryce Harper, but they got these two right,
okay.
And I'm glad that Ohtani won, especially. I mean, really, I mean, if Ohtani's doing things that we literally have never seen in Major League Baseball in terms of a combination of skill set. So for him to not get the MVP would have been criminal.
I could care less about those guys. I'm happy for my guy Nolan because I'm thinking of ordering an appetizer too. All right, that's going to do it for us. Nolan, great job. Same with you, Danny. Mace, great job in Madison. We'll talk again tomorrow while you are in Wisconsin. Make it the best possible night you can.